yes, I'm interrupting myself again. Why? Because year-end giving is so crucial. And I just checked my calendar. We're at the year end. Hey, lo and behold, for my KJV friends, lo and behold, we have a match giving campaign right now. That means every dollar you give will be doubled, which means your impact will be doubled, which means 2026 could be even bigger than 2025. 6 podcasts, all ranking in the top 5%. Books published with HarperCollins, resources. All of our store is now shut down and everything there is free. Courtesy of our gospel partners, we're going to go to 12 campuses next year. If you'd consider becoming a year-end gospel partner, would you please consider doing so? If you're already giving to your church, of course, you can do that at fortisinstitute.org/donate. Thank you.
Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest and I felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go.
It's the Wretched Radio Mail Call Delivery Bag Q&A Infotainment Nationwide Extravaganza, featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
The mail is here!
Ooh, this is Wretched Radio. Wow, I wish that guy would stop preempting the program. So agitating. Did I mention this is Wretched Radio? Hoping you will send stuff to idea@wretched.org. And hey, if you're using your computer, you can visit fortisinstitute.org/donate for our really crucial year-end campaign. We would be really grateful. Now I'm starting to talk like that dude who keeps cutting into the show. You can also text your questions, comments, conundrums, snarks, whatever is on your mind that wouldn't be illegal or really offensive. You can text 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from David. He texted in, Todd, I made a big mistake and I got my 13-year-old son a gaming console as a gift. Unfortunately, it didn't take very long for this to shift his focus and become an idol. I probably don't need to go into more details because I know your thoughts about young men and gaming, and I agree, I made a bad decision. My question is, can I get rid of it even though I got it for him as a gift?
Yes. 877-282-233. Absolutely. Absolutely. Dad, this is leadership right here. What this fellow is describing, this is where you step into your role. You use your loving fatherly authority and you do what is best for the child. That's what our Lord does for us. That's our Hebrews 12 fatherly discipline because he cares for us. You're not being mean. You're being loving. You're taking away something that is damaging him and it is harming him. You say, now that's just a little extreme. Okay, providentially in my stack of stuff, kids who have smartphones by age 12 have higher risk of depression, obesity, and a myriad of other problems. This is a huge study that was done, the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, 10,500 participants. That seems pretty valid. One of the authors of this study said parents should postpone the age at which children receive their first smartphone. I know you're talking about a gaming station smartphone. It's the electronics. It's the going into your own curated world to behave in whatever way or manner that you want to, ignoring family and that electronic buzz. It is such an addiction. And if it causes your child to get wrapped up into it, angry at the family, shut up, Mom, I'm on my game, then you need to intervene. Compared to 12-year-olds who didn't own a smartphone, those who did at a 1.3 times higher risk of depression, even higher risk of obesity, even higher risk of insufficient sleep. Interestingly, the study found kids age 13 who did not have a smartphone at age 12, but acquired one within the last year, had worse mental health outcomes than kids who didn't have a smartphone. Mom and Dad, be courageous. I have said now for years, I do not envy your position. I get it. The pressure is immense, but it is a pressure from the world, and you know better. So I would encourage you, you figure out your plan. It's your home. They're your children. But I would try to pump you up to encourage you to be courageous and do what is best for them. When they turn 18 and they leave your domicile, then it's on them. They choose to do foolish things. They choose to do unhealthy things. That's up to them. But until then, it's up to you to make those decisions out of love. 877-282-2. Jimmy, I'm just thinking.
Yeah.
We've read stories, and I've even seen this. I've seen this with my own eyes. We noticed years ago, we would let Jack play a airplane game. That was it. It was one. He loved to be in the cockpit and pretend, you know, to fly in the plane.
Right.
And those things are pretty incredible, by the way. They're just really, and he would just sit there and he would just love it. And, you know, the flight pattern and all of that stuff. And when we'd call him for dinner, it was tough to get him away from it.
Yep.
And when we did, we noticed we had a different boy. So what did we do? We started by putting limits on it until we dialed it back to the point where it wasn't causing him to go into this zone where he was just not acting like a great family member because he wanted to be in the simulator. That's so I've seen it. That's how we did it. We just started dialing it back. And until we saw improvement, then we just cut it out completely. It's your home and it's just not good for them.
I would also say to David, who asked the question, because he said his son was 13. He's at a very, I guess, at a ripe age. At that age, I would encourage him to not just remove the gaming console, do that, but replace it with something.
Good.
Because this is a teachable moment.
Good. This is put off, put on.
Exactly. So replace it with something that gives him some responsibility.
Yeah. You know what? Good word. In fact, I'll even go even like push that even further. Dad, this is going to demand more time from you. Start doing projects with him. Start giving him assignments. You're going to have to manage your son's calendar a little bit. And this isn't to be like a micromanager. This is because you're helping your son man up. You're helping him step into manhood. And so this should be seen. If I were going to be positioning it today personally, I would do a little sit down. I know teenagers aren't thrilled with those, but nevertheless, I do a little sit down. I would affirm my love for my child. I would affirm my biblical mandate, what I'm supposed to be doing for my child. And based on God's mandate and my love for you, we're going to make a decision that is going to feel hard to you initially, but I'm telling you, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Here's the good thing. No more video games. No more video games. We're going to do better things. We're going to do more important things. We're going to do richer things. We're going to do things that jettison you past your peers. You're going to be smarter. You're going to be stronger. You're going to be more mature. We're going to be doing those things. Here's the plan, son. Starting tomorrow, you and I are doing this thing. Make it as positive as it can be. That's been an ongoing theme at Alpharetta Bible Church. When we talk about sin and when we talk about obeying commandments, we talk about it being the best thing, not sin, the obeying the commandments. That this is what is best for us. But I really, really want to fill in the blank, your sin. Nope, that's not what's best for you. God knows better. Denying that urge is hard, but it is the better decision. It always is, because God's ways are always better. So position it as a positive thing, not as a punitive thing because he's becoming a nasty little 13-year-old. 877. You got any ideas? Send them. Idea@wretched.org. Help each other out or text 877-282-2337.
This is from Anonymous. Todd, being it that it's almost Christmas time, this tends to happen more often. But how okay should we be with listening to non-Christians singing Christian songs and hymns?
Yeah. Would I buy them? No. Do I listen to them in the store? Yeah. How can you avoid it? And I just don't want to be endorsing it. This is just personal. This isn't calling for a boycott. But just personally, I don't want to give money to an artist who's doing nothing but profiting on the celebration of the birth of my Savior. Sorry. You're going to have to find a more clever way to make some money. But you're not going to sing anything sacred while living like Satan is your master. Sorry, but that's just me. So personally, I hear them. And if we turn on the thing with the... I don't want to get all technical with the thing, with the deal, you know, and I push a button.
Spotify.
I don't think it's that.
Okay.
We have this thing at home. My phone connects to a thing, which makes music play. Yes, I'm that big of a moron. And so I push the button and it makes the thing go. We'll put Christmas music on. Yeah. And we're going to get whoever is the heathen singing the Christmas song. It's not like, oh, I got to turn it off. No, I just don't want to contribute it to it in any way. And I wouldn't, this is perhaps personal too. I wouldn't be worshiping along. I wouldn't be singing along. Not when I know. That's why I think it's better. You know whose album is still really good for Christmas? You know, we'll grab a snippet of that. You know who has one of the best Christmas albums for my money? Go Fish. You probably don't even know of them, unless, of course, you've used their Vacation Bible School curriculum. Just awesome stuff. And their Christmas album is really, really good. And you can feel free to sing along because they're believers. Otherwise, I just don't want to be worshiping with somebody who's not a qualified worshiper. It's impossible to avoid it, but it is possible to not participate in it. 877-282-2337, idea@wretched.org. Sup? This is Wretched Radio.
You know what momentum feels like? When the work you've been doing for years, it starts to reach people you never dreamed you'd reach. That's what 2025 has been for Fortis Institute. We're on over 600 radio stations now, over 120 TV networks. Our Fortis Plus app is streaming on Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, everywhere people are watching. And something we never thought we'd do, we closed the warehouse. Every single resource we have is now completely free. 300,000 Play the Man booklets made it into the hands of students this year. We had 3 campus events attended by students who are hungry for truth. Our Fellows podcasts are all ranking in the top 5% worldwide. Dr. Greg Gifford released his new book, and millions, literally millions, are watching on YouTube. But here's the thing about momentum. You can't coast. You have to keep pushing, and that's why December matters so much. Every gift you give this month is matched dollar for dollar up to $500,000. Go to FortisInstitute.org right now. Give today and double your impact. Let's keep the momentum going.
Is it possible a Christian university can actually be ranked high when it comes to preparing students for the real world? Hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. Courses, diplomas, degrees, they can be achieved online or, of course, on their beautiful campus in Southern California. Would you like to learn more about the Masters University to prepare you or your child for the future? I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Know your church fathers. Theophilus of Antioch lived a pagan lifestyle until he was converted by reading the scriptures. His most notable work, Apology, was written to an unbelieving friend to show that the scriptures were self-authenticating and argued that the antiquity, clarity, and consistency of the scriptures prove their divine origin. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Ready to have a flashback? Are you ready to go?
And the way of the messer is for you to go fishing. Not the kind of fishing that you do in a river, cause the way we use is a message to each of us.
I will make you fishers of men if you follow me.
This is Wretched Radio. That was a blast from the past. Jimmy, you don't even recognize that, do you? I can tell by the look on your face.
I don't think
that's so. Go Fish. Jamie Statima wrote that because we were doing witnessing on Way of the Master Radio.
Yeah.
So are you ready to go fish? The something of the is for you to go fishing. Way of the Master is for you to go fish. There, because it had the name of the actual thing. And that's Go Fish. And they put out a Christmas album. This is perhaps one of my favorite Go Fish Christmas songs. Can't forget this as we celebrate the birth of the baby.
It's not just about the manger where the baby lay. It's not all about the angels who sang for him that day. It's not just about the shepherds or the bright and shining star. It's not all about the wise men who traveled from afar. It's about the cross. It's about my sin. It's about how Jesus came to be born once so that we could be born again. It's about the stone that was rolled away.
Go Fish. The reason for the season. Death. Counterintuitive, isn't it? Send a baby who would grow to be a man, who would march to a cross to die, that we might be justified, that we might be adopted, that we might be glorified. That is the reason for the season. Fight for it. Fight for that. We are slammed, bombarded with the worldly version of Christmas. There is no doubt about it. You and I have been beaten down by it. We just see all of the commercials, and it just doesn't. Yeah, that's what the pagans do. And it's holly jolly, and it's about, remember, the season of love. And it's, you know, somebody eating a big meal with a Mercedes-Benz in the driveway. It has nothing to do with Jesus. And those messages, they are constant. We need to fight for it. We need to fight for it. And might I suggest this also, just something to think about a few months in advance. Ask yourself the question, and I'm not being a Christmas curmudgeon. I could be, but I'm not. Why do we spend so much time preparing for Christmas, investing in Christmas, spending for Christmas, which is a major celebration for Christians, arbitrary date, but nevertheless, to celebrate the birth of God? That's a big deal. Easter's bigger. Why don't we put that much effort into Easter? Is it possible it is because we let the world tell us how long we are supposed to be focusing on Christmas? Perhaps we could all make some adjustments. Not that you needed to dial back whatever it is you do for Christmas, but maybe consider, why does it require the world to pump me up that much? And because I don't seem to be putting in that much effort into Easter. Just asking. 877-282-2337.
All right, this question is coming from Mercy. Todd, I've been thinking about children, and more specifically, adoption, a lot lately. And a question has been crossing my mind quite a bit. Is it wrong to pray for infertility? My heart aches for the children who are in adoption or foster homes that need parents. However, I do not feel like I need or want to have children of my own because I feel like that would have a different effect on the process of adoption. Is it sinful to pray for God not to give me children of my own, but rather children that need to be adopted?
Two thoughts for your consideration. Number one, I might encourage you to do some heart surgery. Don't take out a scalpel. Don't open yourself up and go digging around in there. Instead, examine your heart as to why you wouldn't want to have your own children. That's a pretty unnatural feeling. And so I would suspect that there's something inside of your heart that is motivating it. And you might need somebody who can grab a bucket and go down deep into the well of your heart to figure out what's in there that is causing you to not want to have bio children. It could be fear. Now, fear would be natural with having a children. We all understand that. But is it so overwhelming you're actually afraid to have kids because you're not trusting the Lord? I don't know the answer to that question. But that's why I encourage you, dig down and figure out why you would make such an unusual request. And please don't use the adoption thing. I don't think that's a valid reason for not wanting to have bio kids. I suspect there's more there. I don't know what it is, but somebody who loves you, who is godly, might help you discover what it is, because you can adopt and have bio children. Examine your heart. Number two, I'm not sure I would bang my fist on the table, because the best I can come up with really offering an opinion about whether you should be praying that prayer or not are implicit verses. What are they? Well, I'm thinking about what children are. They're a blessing from the Lord. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. We read about the miraculous creation of babies in Psalm 139. What sort of prayers do women offer regarding children? Typically, we see our women pleading with God, give me more. And for the infertile women who would beg God, please give me a child. I would like to have a child. Now, Hannah was praying because she was infertile for children. And so when I take a look at the what we'd have to categorize as implicit, they're not explicit verses because it doesn't pinpoint exactly what you're asking, but they imply and they point us in direction. I think the direction would be, I don't think you should be praying that. I don't think you should. Part of it is just understanding the totality of God's attitude toward children, those implicit Bible verses. I would point you toward, I don't think so. Jimmy, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think that's something to be prayed for because it's always depicted as something that...
joyous.
Yeah, it is. Parenthood is. But I mean, just being barren is something that's is lamented in the Bible.
Would you agree? Those are implicit verses.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think that they point us in a particular direction. And I would say this ultimately. The Lord's going to give you children or not, regardless. Because He opens and closes the womb. And I feel quite confident in saying, should He give you a child, you will be downright out of your mind thrilled. This is Wretched Radio.
Real quickly, before we get to the news, I wanted to jump in and say 2025, man, it has been very good to us. Our campus ministry is growing. Our podcasts are reaching more people than we ever expected them to reach as quickly as they've reached them. And we are so grateful for your support. But 2026, we're not sitting still. Our plans are ambitious, to say the least. But those plans, well, they need partners who believe that the work we're doing matters. Our year-end campaign is happening right now, and it is a match campaign, meaning that every gift you give automatically doubles. If you've benefited from Fortis Institute and you're able to join us as a partner, this would be your opportunity to shape what comes next at Fortis Institute. Just go to fortisinstitute.org right now to find out how. And now we can get to your Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. Google's year-end search results have been released, and buried among Taylor Swift songs and political headlines is something that should alarm every single American. Chinese AI company DeepSeek cracked the top 10 searches. And a new poll shows that Americans aren't asleep at the wheel like most of us would think. 79% see China as an economic threat, 80% worry about national security, and a staggering 91% are concerned about Chinese cyber attacks on our critical infrastructure. Europeans, well, they agree in similar numbers as well. Well, it was a busy week at the Supreme Court. Earlier this week, justices heard arguments from Gabriel Oliver, a 33-year-old Mississippi evangelist, challenging a Brandon City ordinance that relegated his street preaching to a spot where, as his attorney put it, no one can hear him. The city essentially created a free speech zone where free speech just goes to die. And the Trump administration appears to be backing him. And this week, Texas scored a massive redistricting victory when the court ruled the state could implement its new congressional map ahead of 2026. The unsigned order declared that the lower court failed to honor the presumption of legislative good faith. Speaking of Texas, the Lone Star State started enforcing its Women's Privacy Act this week as well, requiring people to use bathrooms matching their biological sex. The law covers restrooms, locker rooms, and changing rooms, and also requires prisons to house inmates by biological sex. Meanwhile, across the pond, Britain continues to sprint toward dystopia. The government announced plans to eliminate jury trials for offenses carrying less than 3 years imprisonment. Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy calls it bold but necessary to clear court backlogs. Of course, those backlogs might have a little something to do with arresting citizens for posting mean tweets about immigration. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content, both of which you could do at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Important dates in Christian history. 1738. John Wesley's conversion eventually leads to the founding of the Methodist Church. Although he had no intention of forming a separate denomination, Wesley's followers left the Anglican Communion and founded churches throughout England and America.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's beginning to look... Hello, welcome back to Wretched Radio. Hoping you will send stuff, whatever is wretched, to idea@wretched.org. Would you also please... I'm sorry. I just had a brain synapse. Get lots of those. There was a video that somehow made it into my feed. It was some comedian saying, do you remember the kerfuffle that happened a few years ago? Baby, It's Cold Outside. Was determined it was super sexist and misogynistic. And the comedian said, okay, I guess. But simultaneously, while we were having that online skirmish, he said, would you like to know the name of the number one song in America at that time? And it was something so filthy and degrading to women. It actually had swear words in it, the title of it. I mean, like, whoa, sort of stuff. while we're getting all upset that 50 years ago, somebody was singing, Baby, It's Cold Inside. Yeah. 877-282-2337 or idea@wretched.org.
Right, this is from Anna. Ton, what is your opinion on women wearing makeup? Is it always wrong for women to wear makeup, or is it just a heart issue?
It's a heart issue. You have liberty in this area. In fact, I would say it's a real heart issue, because physical presentation is an area that is rife with potential for sin. Why we want to look the way that we do. Here's the principle. I think there's a singular principle that determines how much we take care of our body, what we wear, what we do with our hair, makeup, all of that. Am I being a good representative of the Lord Jesus Christ? Simple as that. Am I being a good am I speaking with my clothing what he would have me communicate? And so this is a heart examination issue. I wouldn't like turn this into a thing, but it wouldn't be a horrible exercise for any woman to ask the question, why am I putting on makeup? Because it's a cultural thing to a degree, but why are you putting on makeup? I understand why women do it, but why are you doing it? Is there anything there that might be sinfully motivated? Vanity? Fear of looking old? Maybe you're trying to lure? I don't know. What I'm saying is there's possibilities. Do you have liberty? Absolutely. But just like every liberty, we need to ask ourselves the question, what is my heartbeat on this subject? And if it borders on sinful, then you make some adjustments. If not, then you put your makeup on. If you don't want to put on makeup, you don't have to put on makeup, because there's no command that says you should or you shouldn't. You should dress in the way that represents Jesus Christ the best way. 877-282-23. Jimmy?
I don't wear makeup.
Okay, then we can move on. 877-282. Should men wear makeup? Did you watch the Elvis movie?
Uh-uh.
The big, it was a couple of years ago.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
yeah. Baz Luhrmann, I think, is his name. By the way, the new Elvis movie is coming out supposedly in February. Don't ask me how I know that. I'm just telling you. It's going to be out in February. This was the other one. And it showed younger Elvis, and he was wearing makeup. Mm. And I thought, I don't think he wore makeup, did he? What's a grown man doing wearing makeup? Now, what Bible verse, Jimmy, would say a man shouldn't wear makeup?
I don't think there is one, because I think there is a rhyme or reason that men would put on a little bit. I mean, doing television and lighting and all that stuff, I think there's a reason for it. So I don't think it's, yeah. Now, if you're doing it because you're wearing makeup like a woman wears makeup, I think there that's an issue.
Why?
Because I don't think men should do that.
Why?
Because it's not right.
Why?
Because it's...
Is this the Jimmy law of personal preference?
I think so.
I think you got biblical support. I'm guessing it's Deuteronomy, maybe Numbers, that a man shouldn't wear women's clothes and shouldn't present himself as a woman. God likes gender distinctions. Now, this does get tricky and challenging, especially when it comes to attire, length of hair, and potentially even makeup. What culture, what century are we in? That makes a big difference, because if, unless there's a Bible verse I'm not thinking of, if today in America, 2025, it were the norm that men wore makeup, And it would, nobody thought that, oh, you're wearing makeup like a woman. That's a woman's thing. If we were flip-flopped in that regard, or if we were in a culture where men put it on for special occasions and that was what was expected, I don't think it would be a sin. I don't think it would, because you're not blurring the gender distinctions, and God doesn't make the gender distinction of only women should wear makeup and men shouldn't. Those are culturally driven things, and they can change based on zip code and century. And so if you ask me today, should a man wear makeup? The answer is no, because a dude shouldn't look like a lady. He should look like a dude, and a woman should look like a woman. Jimmy went to the doctor, and I got to tell you, I was filling out the forms, and it gave me pause. It asked me what my assigned gender was.
At birth, yeah.
And I'm looking at it going, do I want to trust you with my health? Am I? You can't really? 877-282-2337.
So this is from Anonymous, who texted in, Todd, what does it look like in practice to submit to my church when there's a difference over secondary beliefs?
Do you need to change your theology on something secondary? No, you don't need to submit in that way. So I'm not sure what Jimmy, that's just a very difficult question because I just don't have any information.
Well, that's all it was.
Could we do a different question?
Yeah.
I don't have enough there. It's like, what do you mean submit on secondary? What? Do you have to conform to? I'll try to answer it again.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You just want to keep going?
I'll just pick it up from right after where you asked the question.
Okay.
I'll be close on time.
I don't think you went too far into it.
Yeah. So after you said, just finish the question, how you read it.
Oh, you mean to ask it again?
Yeah.
What does it look like in practice to submit to my church when there is a difference over secondary beliefs?
Do you mean change your secondary beliefs in submission to the church? I'm not sure submission is the most helpful word here. If you are in a church where you do not agree with every single thing that is articulated in their statement of faith, there's a difference of opinion. Let's just use eschatology. That's the easiest one. Do you have to change your eschatology? Well, I think as a matter of conscience, you probably shouldn't. In that instance, I would ask your church, can I stay here if we have differences of opinion on secondary issues? Some churches might have a problem with that. I think most would say, no, you can stay here. You just can't teach those things. So you would have to submit and you don't try to propagate your personal opinion on eschatology. But I don't think that you have to change your theology. Now, should this be a church that says, nope, we insist on it, then you're probably going to have to find another church that matches or that allows for differences on secondary opinions. Jimmy, anything to add to that?
No.
Thanks for your help. 877-282-2337.
This is from Gabe. Todd, he texted in and wanted to know, how do we know when God is disciplining us?
That's a great question. There's two aspects of hard things that God is using it to sanctify you, or he can be disciplining you as a loving father. Either way, I think it is incumbent upon us, anytime we go through something that's hard, to petition the Lord to reveal to you that you would study your Bible, examine your life. Lord, what are you trying to teach me in this? I want to know. I want to be obedient. So examine my heart, search my heart. Help me to figure out if there's anything in there that you do not like. Because I think that ultimately, whether it's discipline, because if it's discipline or his desire to sanctify you, the issue is the same, your growth. Either way, he's wanting to grow you. Because nothing happens to his children. Everything happens for his children. And that includes hard things, whether it's a sinful event, something that's evil, or a non-sinful calamity. He is in it, in that, not responsible for the evil, but in that he uses those things sinlessly to bring about a greater abundance of fruit in your life. And so I don't think that I would get hung up on the distinction of, Lord, are you disciplining me here? Are you trying to grow me? Because it's kind of synonymous, isn't it? Lord, teach me what I should know because I want to be obedient and I don't want to waste my fill in the blank. I think that was John Piper's famous sermon. He wrote a booklet about it, I think. Don't waste your cancer. What? Don't waste your cancer. So was God disciplining or growing John Piper with his cancer? The answer is, I don't know, but it's irrelevant because it was incumbent upon John to figure out what the Lord has for him in the cancer. I think that is where I would spend my time and my energy, knowing that even when it is hard, God is being good. Now, Lord, what is that good thing? Reveal it to me so I can be more pleasing to you. This is Wretched Radio.
You know that moment at 3 a.m. when you can't sleep, everything is quiet, and you're alone with the truth about who you really are versus who everyone thinks you are. Your wife trusts you, your kids look up to you, the guys at church think you've got it all together, but you know better. You know the secret battles, the deleted history, the promises you keep breaking to yourself and to God. Here's what took me way too long to figure out. You can't fix a spiritual problem with human solutions. Accountability software won't change your heart. White-knuckling it through another week won't either. And Todd Friel is getting to the heart of this issue with his resource, Play the Man. It doesn't give you another list of rules. It shows you how Christ actually changes men from the inside out. How he replaces the wanting, not just the doing. The man your family deserves, that guy is possible, but not through your own strength. It's going to be through the strength of Christ working through you. Play the Man. It's available now as an ebook, an audiobook, and a video series only at fortisplus.org because real men know when they need real help. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually felt something without fear, without shame, without immediately wanting to numb it? If you're living on autopilot, you're not alone. Millions are told the same thing. It's just a chemical imbalance. Hey, take this, you'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're numb. Here's the truth the world doesn't tell you. Your emotions, they're not the enemy, but they also shouldn't be your master either. Dr. Greg Gifford gets that, and his new series, Life Without the Numb, is available right now at fortisplus.org. It's a free 10-week series that shows how God's Word speaks into anxiety, depression, and emotional chaos, and it does so with clarity you've never heard before. New episodes every Monday, absolutely free at fortisplus.org. This isn't about ignoring struggles. It's about transformation from the inside out. Life Without the Numb. Watch at fortisplus.org. Stop surviving and start living. Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Oh, you know the feeling. Every morning you wake up and you wonder, how am I going to navigate this weird, crazy, upside down world with biblical wisdom? We should have that thought every day. And that's exactly why Fortis Institute exists. We're your daily partner in standing firm in biblical truth. From our podcasts with Dr. John Kratz to Pastor Brad Bigney to Libby Glosson, Dr. Adam Tyson, Dr. Greg Gifford, and others, we're bringing together voices you can trust. But this doesn't happen by accident. When you become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, you're not just giving money, you're discipling young men struggling with pornography. You're equipping pastors in small rural churches. You're preaching the gospel to students who desperately need to hear it. And by the way, make sure that you grab the Fortis Plus app. It's free for everybody and it's packed with hundreds of hours of content right now with more being added daily. Because we believe biblical truths should be accessible to everyone. That's why we need you to help push this to the globe. Our work is nowhere near finished. Visit FortisInstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Books of the Bible. Esther is the story of a Jewish woman who becomes queen of Persia. After a plot to destroy the Jews is uncovered, Esther risks her life to save her people. She appeals to the king, who kills the conspirators and allows the Jews to defend themselves. When you face persecution, remember God is able to save his people through all kinds of circumstances. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hello, I'm a Steve Brown wannabe. This is Wretched Radio. He popped up in my feed. Steve Brown. Do you know who Steve Brown is?
I don't.
He might have the most amazing bass voice for anybody ever on radio. His His voice, he popped up in my feed, and he's older now, which means his voice is even lower. He's like J.D. Sumner, just rumbles down there. What a voice he has. Sorry you have to put up with mine. Please send wretched stuff to idea@wretched.org. And hey, while you're at your computer, just a reminder, it's year-end giving time. Please consider supporting us because, well, we'd like to keep doing what we're doing and more in 2026, and we cannot do it without our gospel partners. Would you please consider giving at this time because we have a matching gift campaign. You can learn more about everything we do here, fortisinstitute.org/donate. Then you can grab your phone and text stuff to 877-282-2337.
Well, that's exactly what Josiah did. And he texted, Todd, how much should I trust someone who says they're a Christian, but they've lied a lot in the past?
Mm-hmm. I think there's some tension in the question. Hence the reason for the dilemma, Friel. Let's identify the tension. The Bible commands us to hope all things. We want the person to be telling the truth. So it's like, okay, I want to trust you. In fact, I would even go this far. I'm going to trust you, but your track record gives me pause. And it gives me, I think, reasonable motivation to trust but verify and to make sure that you actually are telling the truth. And I think you need to walk in the middle of that tension. Hope that the person is telling the truth. But don't be naive, because that's a foolish person. Hope, verify. I wrote that, by the way. Trust but verify. That was mine. I don't know if you realize that. Jimmy, yes. How much would you trust somebody who's got a history of lying to you?
Well, I think there's a level of discernment that you should have.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So just be wise, and in this type of situation too. With somebody who's got a particular sin that they've struggled with, if this person is a believer, being able to be transparent about your hesitation should not offend them. Now it should. It can offend a genuine Christian because receiving criticism is hard. We know that. But if he's genuinely born again and you say, "Hey, bro, you know, I don't want to keep dredging it up. I'm not doing that. I'm not trying to throw this in your face, but it's happened before when I asked you this, you said that, but then it turned out to be another thing." Are we cool here? Are we above board on this thing? You should be able to do that with a brother. And if we are a Christian, we should be able to receive that happily. No, not only should we be willing to receive that, we should seek that better. Are the wounds of a friend than the kisses of an enemy? That is a level of maturity. I ain't there. It's hard, isn't it? I will say this: the Lord has grown me in that area. But I confessionally, did any of us like to be told you're sinning? You're being dumb. You didn't say it very well. I'd like to get better and better at that. 877-282-2337.
This is a text from Anonymous.
Oh, you so blew your chance.
Why?
Oh, you could have criticized me and then I would have just revealed how sinful I am.
No, I'm just being graceful. Uh-huh. I thought about it, uh-huh. But I'm a great guy.
Is that what this is?
I'm being humble too. All right, this is from Anonymous. Todd, how can I overcome fear of commitment and stepping into a godly marriage due to a broken upbringing?
Yeah.
Seeing divorce and pain everywhere growing up, plus having parents who were never really married in the first place, has really jaded my view on marriage. How do I overcome these fears?
Oh, it's trust. It really is trust. Now, this is a process, but I'm just answering the bottom line question. It's trusting not the husband, not the potential wife, trusting the Lord. There are two components in this dynamic. Trust is one of them, but then faithfulness is the other. If you're dating somebody and you're doing it wisely and well, you're reading your Bible about what qualifies an individual to be a spouse, husband or wife, you're receiving godly counsel, You're really examining the person to see if they fit those qualifications. You're basically doing due diligence. You're checking, you're seeing how this individual interacts with their family. You give it some time, whatever it is that you sift and sort, you're being faithful to make a wise decision. If you make that decision, yep, this guy, this gal qualifies. I've been thorough. Lord, I'm going to make the decision to marry this person. I hope you are pleased with my decision that I have been faithful in the process. You get married and you trust the Lord. Just trust him. Now you say, but what if it turns out to be a disaster? You trust the Lord. You trust the Lord that he wanted you to marry that person. Now, it could be that you actually were sinful in your decision-making process. That could be. And you can repent of that, but you don't need to feel like you've married the wrong person. You can't marry the wrong person because that nothing happens outside of God's providential will. Now, you could be outside of his perfect will because you made a sinful decision, but you're not outside of his providential will. So you can rest trusting the Lord. You've married the right person. Now you need him to help you navigate these choppy waters because it didn't turn out like you were hoping. And trust the Lord. Faithfulness and trust. And let me suggest this to you also. In fact, this as I'm speaking to this individual, I might be speaking to every pastor who might be listening. We live in a time, especially for younger generations, we live in an era of fear. Everything, COVID really, really set this time bomb off. Do you ever remember before COVID leaving somebody like, hey, Jimmy, see you later? Before COVID, did you ever say, be safe? Be safe. No, see you later. Hey, dude, take care. Hey, the roads, they could look out for the deer when you're driving from Tennessee. Okay, but this be safe. You got to be safe. We got to make sure everybody's safe. It just fostered this fear that we have of the world. And I don't think it's abated much at all. In fact, you know, hey, the planet's burning up. What? You're in danger. These leaders, they're terrible. You're in danger. Oh, geopolitical events, you're in danger. And everybody's quite fearful. And add to that the anti-God worldviews that tell people that good things are bad things, like marriage and children. You don't want to get married. She's gonna be unfaithful. She's gonna want to get a divorce. You're gonna lose half of your stuff. Oh, okay. Kids, oh, they cost so much. Oh, you've got global warming. Oh, don't have kids. It's terrifying. And I think that that's the world that we live in. And I don't think the Christian church is immune to it, which is why we need to be wise about this cultural moment, because we don't want to turn it into a Christian bravado. Hey, we're Christians and we can do all things through Christ. And I'm not going to put on a bulletproof vest when I'm walking into a crime scene. No, you're wise about these things. You don't want to be brazen. You don't want to cast off any common sense. But having said that, there is a courage that I think the Christian should have. And I think it really goes back to this faithfulness and trust business. If you're being faithful, you're being wise, be courageous, because you can trust the Lord. Not reckless, not foolish, but courageous and strong and brave. Don't do dumb things because, well, I trust the Lord and, you know, sovereignty. Don't do that. That's prohibited in the Bible, to act like a knucklehead. But Christians should be courageous. So my question to a pastor would be, have you considered how you might increase the courage of your congregation? Have you considered how you could do that? For instance, I'll just hat tip on this for whatever it's worth. Sermon this Sunday at Alpharetta Bible Church. It's on the doctrine of adoption. The doctrine of adoption should cause us to be courageous Christians. I did not say reckless, but because we know that we are God's child. You are sons and daughters. You are given a new status. You were wallowing in a pigsty and you've been placed among princes. That's who you are. And that should cause you to not have a fear of man. that should cause you to not be terrified of making decisions that the Bible says would be a good decision to marry somebody who's godly, make babies. Don't let the world control those that you are spiritual guardians for. Increase their courage in a time of cowardice and cowering and terror, because the world is screaming at all of us, be afraid. God says, be wise, be courageous. You're safe because you're my child. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.